right, everyone. Welcome back for another episode of our CX podcast here. Happy Thursday. We had to switch it up a little bit. Paul decided to throw me a curveball this week and switch up our topics. But actually, it's a really important topic and one that we're seeing for our clients and prospects and those that we're talking out in the industry, which is all about ROI and CX, right? It's that hard financial metric, how does CX drive success from a financial standpoint. So that's what we're going to spend our time talking about today. But we wanted to start with one of our normal segments, CX in the news. And Paul, you actually found a really interesting article. And so I thought you want to share that.
Yeah, so I came across an article. I mean, Uber's been in the news any number of times for a lot of different reasons, both positive and negative. This time they were coming up negative. Mm-hmm. The Atlantic Monthly had an article about deleting Uber, and that there's a hashtag out there, delete Uber. And for any number of reasons, they've been in the press around that. The article actually talked about a couple of interesting highlights that I saw. It was more of a behavioral economist who was talking about, while that exists out there and many people may support it, the people are habitual. And so not many people often go do it. While they may think about doing it, may want to do it, may have stuff, people are creatures of habit. And at some level, you know, on the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, getting from place to reliably from point A to point B is a powerful driving force. Yep. That unless I actually know how to use the other thing, I may not actually switch. The article also talked about how the long road it takes to actually create a great reputation in the marketplace and how quickly you can undermine that. Mm-hmm. There's any number of research studies that say that people who have bad experiences tell many, many more people about it and creates a broader reputation. When people have a good experience, they tell fewer people about mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. Thus, it can snowball very quickly. You can I always think of customer experience as being a bank account that you put deposits in with good experiences and you withdraw when you create bad experiences. Just know that your good experiences put less money in than the withdrawals.
Yeah.
And you can go into negative deficit pretty quickly, and then it just takes you longer to build it up. But anyway, I just thought of a couple of interesting things about people's habits and the how long and hard it can be to build a good reputation. Once companies build that, it can become very much a differentiating kind of factor.
Yeah, I wonder if, and this kind of goes to brand staying power, but bad experiences are not created equal as well in terms of those companies that can, right? The debit there can be smaller than maybe some other organization, right? I'm curious. I would be curious to see the impact, right, of a bad experience on one company versus another. Like Uber, because
there's a great story a couple of things. One, a customer experience leader at United Healthcare used to talk about white chip moments and blue chip moments. Mm-hmm. White chips and poker, blue chips and poker. White chips are worth $1, blue chips are worth $25. Sometimes things are just annoying and irritating, but they're really white chips. They don't really matter. Mm-hmm. Sometimes things are big deals. Mm-hmm. And can really create our trust and have a more longer lasting emotional impact on you. Companies can spend a lot of time on white chip moments and really not move the needle and
right.
miss the blue chip moments. And so that's one thing that becomes important for companies to think about, especially investing. Yeah, you know, we came across a healthcare company that was putting $100,000 into Swedish fish, little candies, The house was burning,
right.
and some executive thought it was a great idea to put $100,000 into Swedish fish. Not a good idea. the other story that I had was I talked with an outsourced contact center. So many companies outsource their contact mm-hmm. centers and so forth. They were outsourcing both Apple's and Verizon's contact center, or portions of it. Two companies with different experience ratings. they would have customers come in with the exact same problem, same phone, mm-hmm. same issue. If they were Verizon customers, they tended to blame Verizon and think Verizon was causing the mistake. If they were Apple customers, they tended to blame themselves. Hmm. It's my stupidity. I don't know how to work this, right?
Wow.
Same exact issue, same exact phone, perception. I mean, this is where the behavioral economics gets really yeah. interesting in this, that brand with good reputation, suddenly I'm not blaming it and the same exact problem. I may actually even judge differently based on your reputation out there, my perception of you.
Wow, that's really interesting. And yeah, boy, sucks for those wireless communication companies because they just
bottom of the barrel. No one likes them, and they, you know, even if it's not their fault, they're getting blamed.
Exactly, exactly. Well, I think you know, part of the conversation certainly segued into our key topic for this episode, which is around ROI and showing financial success of customer experience. And I know this is something that a lot of organizations out there kind of see CX as squishy and not really something that you can tangibly measure and show real success in terms of financial impact on the organization. But I think through your experience, you've seen differently.
Yeah, I have. And, you know, there is some challenges for sure in measuring customer experience, because customer experience ultimately, your entire value chain, how you deliver value to customers and all of those activities you do to deliver value out to customers are implicit in customers' experience, mm-hmm. how you orchestrate those. And so, you know, how I take the complexity of all of these various different ways that customers interact with your company and put a value proposition on a project or a series of projects or a program or a multi-year transformation is hard. But companies that do it, ultimately, you know, hard problems mean opportunities for those who go and tackle it. At a very tactical level, there's three places I look around creating a business rationale for customer experience. There's three kinds of economics, and I'm borrowing this from any number of people. First of all, there are what's called referral economics.
Okay.
So the folks at Net Promoter, I think, and Satmetrics came up with this, but essentially you've got promoters, people who like you and will talk good things about you, and detractors. And mm-hmm. then there's some neutrals in the middle or passives. We talked about detractors telling other people in right. reviews and, you know, recommendations to friends, you know, would you do business with them? Detractors are going to have an impact on your business. And, you know, if you actually go out and measure how many people are my promoters, or how many people are my detractors with something like a Net Promoter Score, I can actually go in and say, well, my detractors will tell X number of people, and that will have an influence on whether people buy or not, or my reputation on the market, whether, you know, all of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And there is a real, hard to measure, but real impact to those detractors, just as much as positive word of mouth has a positive impact. Mm-hmm. Those people giving me good reviews and recommending me. So there is such a thing as referral economics that you can calculate and put some assumptions around. Super squishy, but it's real out there. There's a second layer, which I would call loyalty economics.
Mm-hmm.
The loyalty economics are, how long does someone stay? Do they churn? Again, if I look at promoters versus detractors, those who have good experiences versus bad experiences, you know, how much longer do they stay? What's the total lifetime value of those folks? There's some other pieces, which is, you know, if they've got a good experience, how much more likely are they to buy other products and services mm-hmm. from?
Yep.
So there's a kind of a wallet share, you know, goes into the lifetime value versus those who don't. And there's, you know, again, there's some common sense around this. If I have a bad experience with a company or I don't like a company, I may be trapped. And so some of the loyalty is tricky.
Right.
Want to know, right? And that's where the cross-selling
is. Is it true loyalty or is it?
True loyalty, yeah. Right. Walker Information talks about, another consultancy mm-hmm. out there talks about the true loyalty versus being trapped, which I love. You know, if I don't have a great experience with a company, I likely won't buy another product with them if I don't have to.
Right.
I might be trapped, and so my longevity might be long. But, you know, and I think a lot of the loyalty programs that are point-based encourage, they're like a cancer. They encourage customers being trapped, which is some short-term profitability, but man, when the market changes, you're going to bleed customers because they're not truly loyal. They're not evangelists,
right,
so forth. The third layer that I look at is project economics, and that
okay.
can often be the easiest one is, look, I've got a horrible conversion rate in my buying process. And if I actually focus on the customer experience of going through that, I could probably increase my conversion rate. Or
mm-hmm.
I'm looking in the contact center, I've got all kinds of things that customers are calling in for. They probably don't want to call in the first place. If I actually go do some root cause analysis and understand what that customer experience is like, I can probably avoid a whole bunch of calls into the contact center. Those
yeah.
tend to be the easiest ones to hit on early on in a customer experience maturity process. The companies are just starting out with customer experience. More often than not, focus in on let's find and fix things, and there are probably cost savings or revenue bumps that are very easily measurable just by looking at the world through the customer's perspective.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, so there are all these different levels. You know, when we're trying to talk to organizations and even those that work in organizations that are trying to sell CX internally, right? You know, you always hear the idea, well, build me a business case. What's the business case for this? So how does ROI help build that business case for CX within an organization?
Yeah, so sometimes it's, you know, at a project-based level, you know, we may do some sort of assessment, understand what the drivers are of promoters or detractors, and try to build in some of those calculations. You know, again, if,
mm-hmm.
if I've got a core capability where I actually know who likes me and who's having a great experience versus those who not, and I can connect that to financials. But I also know what drives detractors, or I know what drives people from being neutral to a promoter. You know, in any, I don't want to be too NPS centric. I could be using
mm-hmm.
Forrester's Customer Experience Index. I could be using a 0 to 10 satisfaction score. Whatever your metrics are for measuring, you know, what drives a great experience or not.
Yep.
Looking at the high end versus the low end and how to move people up through that funnel, I could actually go into particular projects where I'm looking at the number of detractors and I say, if I can get rid of this, you know, fix this problem with these kinds of projects and fix these promoters into neutrals, they're going to stay longer. They're not going to
mm-hmm.
leave us as much. We'll have a higher wallet share, right? Those are the kinds of things that I may do. It may be very tactical savings. I'm going to avert a certain number of calls from a contact center, but it also may be, you know, making that bigger business case around that. Again, for projects, it's a little bit harder rationalizing an entire program because
mm-hmm.
building a voice of the customer in and of itself does not have an ROI. It's a capability. Mm-hmm. You got to have it. You're never going to get good at customer experience if you can't listen to customer
right.
experience. At some level, you know, any company that doesn't want to listen to its customers or at least take the pulse, when customers say what they do can be very different things. But if you don't even want to take the pulse and you don't think customers are important, I probably don't want to do business with
yeah.
you. And if I'm a customer experience leader there, I may
right.
be thinking about a career change, right? Because
yeah.
it's not important. And great, there are companies out there. God bless and see you later.
Right.
But you know, there's a great there's a consultancy that took some of Forrester's customer experience index data and looked at public companies in a portfolio, and I like what they did because they really looked at the valuation of the company over time.
Okay.
And said, look, if you got a great customer experience score over time, you know, and are, you know, you're a customer experience leader, your growth trajectory is through the roof compared to the laggards in their index. And it was really a very holistic. Ultimately, your brand and your reputation ought to translate into overall value. And that's a bigger picture. These are
mm-hmm.
complex systems. If you're great at customer experience, let's just measure it.
Mm-hmm.
What do customers think about us? And now what does that do to our financials versus, you know, companies that, you know, are perceived as providing horrible experiences? You know, it's very associated with brand and brand reputation and so forth.
Right.
But I think people have done some really good valuation types of things based on your reputation in the marketplace.
Interesting. So, you know, we kind of talked a little bit about it's maybe a little bit, it's hard, it's challenging to kind of do some of this measurement. How prevalent is it out in the market? You know, are there good examples of CX leaders where that you know it's fairly obvious, or they've highlighted their work in measurement, or is it something that companies, you know, it's very theoretical and not necessarily a lot of people are doing it?
Yeah, no, there are clearly people doing it. You know, and I've seen companies, you know, get as far, you know, and every company probably really any customer experience leader needs to do this kind of work internally to create credibility. And it's really starting to get a good handle on those, that listening post and creating that relationship survey and then diving into the financial details. You know, many companies can't even calculate their customer lifetime value. Right. But what you want to do is start looking at that. And Maersk Lines, you know, boring shipping company, you know, but had calculated that a 4-point lift in net promoter score equated to a 1-point lift in revenue.
Wow.
Okay. For every 4 points, right? That's going to hit the bottom line from a revenue perspective in X amount of ways. You know, people, the basic simple comparison is just go take the people who like you versus the people who don't and look at things like wallet share, likelihood to buy, you know, customer lifetime value. Those are some of the easy things. So a lot of people have done that kind of stuff. I was just talking with, I can't talk about the company, but was a very famous hospitality organization. You know, super experiences, they're really hot right now. They've been spending the last year, they actually implemented a relationship net promoter scores about a year and a half ago. They were about a year into starting to look at the financial data. They're really looking at, you know, customer experience as being a leading indicator of future business.
Interesting.
And we're about a year into it and wanted a little bit more data to really make that calculation. So did not have the calculation yet. Yeah. You would have thought they would, but, you know, a little bit behind. So, you know, again, I see oftentimes with customer experience leaders, it takes about a year, year and a half. And sometimes it's just getting the data is non-trivial. Getting that operational data and tying that up with my enterprise voice of the customer software, whatever you may have, can be a non-trivial task just in and of itself.
Right.
I was just working with a healthcare company, and gosh, all of the legal ramifications around grievance processes for doing open ends and giving surveys, you know, were some huge obstacles to overcome just to start getting a baseline of what do our customers feel about us.
Yeah.
Now I actually have to go deal with my entire IT organization to connect operational data and calculate lifetime value there. So, you know, some challenges that can go into there.
Absolutely. So, I think the answer to this should be pretty obvious, but you know, at the end of the day, what's the value of being able to calculate your ROI of CX?
Yeah, ultimately it's got to come back to, you know, it's the consulting organization that I said that took Forrester's data, right? It's my valuation of my company. It's my, you know, my growth in revenue. It's what reputation and word of mouth give you in a marketplace. So at the high level, you know, I think it's that. You know, I think there's some probably other, you know, companies that are good, listen, are in tune, have a, you know, are listening to customer signals and how customers are changing. There's got to be there's an element of what is the value of agility in a marketplace like we have today. How do I innovate? How do I adapt to market changes and new competition and new attitudes and behaviors of my customers? Right. Ultimately that comes out, my ability to adapt is going to come out my stock price,
right,
my profits, right? Ultimately, you know, and I think any customer experience leader should be paying attention to kind of those high levels and be making that case. I would also say within any company, there's probably a core. You know, if I'm a brand new company, it might be about growth. If I'm an older company, it may be organic growth rather than new acquisition. If I'm top heavy, it might be some cost saver. You know, I'd be looking at those and trying to connect and, you know, using some verbal jujitsu to connect how customer experience and being close to the customer can save money, that builds revenue, that, you know, creates longer term, more richer, profitable customers, right? At the end of the day, we've got to be numerate. We're going to be competing with any number of different parts of the organization, all making the same case. So we've got to be literate with our CFO and understand what really is the company trying to do in its stage in life and its market conditions today.
Got it. Well, this was really interesting. A lot to think about for folks, and it really kind of helps elevate organizations through that maturity to be able to have these types of discussions and understanding of how the value is measured within the organization. So thanks for starting to peel back that onion for folks this week. And next week, I think we'll get back on schedule and we'll return back to our customer understanding and talking about journey mapping. But any last thoughts there, Paul?
Yeah, I was gonna say that I've talked to any number of chief customer officers or chief experience officers, and a quote from one of them resonates. It's, you know, make the CFO your best friend. You know, at the end of the day, if the CFO is on board and buys into what you're saying, you know, that's, you know, powerful ally in this. Again, difficult to do that, but that, you know, should be the aim of any customer experience leader.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, appreciate the time today as always. And thank you everyone for listening and watching. And we'll be back next week with our next episode. So have a great weekend and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks. Have a great one.
Take care. All right.